Hari hi om. You ready? Sahana vavatu, sahana bhunaktu, sahaviryan karavavahai, tejasvi navadhi tamastoma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shantihi. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay, so now burning the Khandava forest. Then we have that Krishna and Arjuna then started, protecting the forest. Agni then burnt around and then it was building up and big, big fire attracted the attention of the demigods. Indra came and then he started fighting with Arjuna and the whole host of demigods. You know, so just him alone, he could keep them back. Then they went into celestial weapons and all the different things, and then it was understood that he couldn't be beaten. So then Lord Brahma then spoke from the sky saying that this is Narnarayan Rishi, and so you're not, you know, Takshaka is not in the forest, so you don't have to worry because that was why Indra came. And you can't beat these because defeat Arjuna and Krishna because it's the Supreme Lord and his devotee. And so then Indra was pleased with the whole fight, and so then they desisted and they left. And so then they continued to manage take care of it so that nothing would happen, and for 15 days until everything was just completely destroyed. So at the very end, as mentioned here, then there was a leader of the Asura race named Maya. He had been dwelling in the Khandava. Having hid himself underground, he now rushed out of the forest and tried to escape. So he was underground, so I guess the fire didn't bother him. And so then everything was reduced to ashes, but then he was trying to escape. But the idea was that whatever was living in that forest, they were all sinful. Agni chased the Asura, and Krishna raised his discus weapon. Sudarshan ready to kill him. The intelligent Maya ran to Arjuna and fell at his feet. Arjuna, I seek your protection. Save me. I supplicate myself before you. Right? So he was intelligent. So he goes to Krishna. Then, this is what's been ordained, and they're protecting. So if Krishna's going to kill somebody, he can't protect. But he went to the devotee. And if devotee gives protection, then you get Krishna's protection. Arjuna raised his hand and replied, do not fear. You cannot refuse to protect anyone who sought a shelter. Because you see all these other demons and Rakshasas and Danavas and Nagas came out. They just either fighting or tried to escape or that. Or, so many weapons they used and all. So it was a battle. But with Maya, he was more clever. He just came out and just surrendered to Arjuna. He turned towards Krishna and asked him to spare the Asura's life. Krishna lowered his weapon and Agni also stood back. Right, because if Arjuna wanted this one to be like that, okay, this one. As the flames in the forest died down, Indra again appeared before Arjuna and Krishna. Agni stood next to him as he said, O Partha, O Keshava, you have achieved that which could not be achieved by any celestial. Please ask for me any boon you desire. I am very much pleased. Right, so this is Indra himself, because he's done something no one could have done, a single person fighting the whole host of demigods. Of course, this single person had the backing of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But that's the whole point. Why would he have that unless he's such a great devotee? So the prowess he showed has never been seen, and the ability for one person to show that prowess has never been seen. And that's because who has that much devotion that then they get that kind of favor of the Lord. So it's not just a material benediction that, yeah, he was devotee, so he got this. It's that reciprocation between the Lord and the devotee. It's a pastime. Arjuna asked Indra for all his celestial weapons. Indra smiled and replied that he would indeed give him the weapons, but not yet. When Shiva would give Arjuna his Pashupata weapon, then Indra would bring him to heaven and give him all the fire and wind weapons. That time would come in the future, right? So because he needs these weapons for the war. But the war is not happening now because they're in Indraprastha. They'll have to go through the being in the, you know, in exile in the forest for the 12 years on the incognito, then after that in the 14th year. So, you know, so he's saying that first you get the weapon from Lord Shiva, and then you come at night, because he knows how things are going to pan out. And so then he knows at that time he'll come up to heaven, Arjuna will spend some time there, you know, with his father, and then he'll get all the weapons and everything. Krishna, so he wanted to give a benediction to Arjuna and Krishna. Krishna then asked that his friendship with Arjuna might last forever, and Indra said, "It shall be so." Right, so he came to give, because Krishna's playing the part of an ordinary person. And so then Arjuna gets the benefit, he wants the weapons for the battle, and Krishna wants that his relationship with Krishna be eternal, like that. So it will be, everybody will know it. So they always hear about Krishna and Arjuna. So you see here also, they were introduced by Brahma as Narayan Rishi. So then they go back to the beginning of the creation. Finally, Agni said, "I also wish to give you a boon. Just as I pervade this universe, so by my power will you be able to go anywhere you desire within the universe." The gods then return to the heavens, right? So Arjuna just asked for the weapons, and he, you know, that, okay, that's there, but he wanted some kind of special benediction that Indra wanted to give. So Arjuna asked for this, Krishna asked that their relationship, and then Arjuna said, you know, he wants to give something, because it's his son, so he just asked that by his, he pervades the universe, so Indra pervades the universe means his power, he can go anywhere in the universe, and also his you know, the rain goes anywhere, his lightning bolt goes anywhere, anything like this. So he wanted that power for his son, that he's able to go anywhere in the universe that he likes. As Krishna and Arjuna made their way back to their mansion, Maya approached them. He bowed at Arjuna's feet and said, "O son of Kunti, you have saved me from the angry Krishna and the hungry Agni," angry and hungry. "Tell me what I can do for you in return." Arjuna replied, "I cannot take anything from you to repay me. This is my firm principle. I act only out of duty. It was my duty to save you, and therefore you bear me no obligation. Go in peace." Right, because for many, as you've done something for them, they want to repay that, and you know, it works out. It can also be in friendship and pleasant like that, a nice exchange. But for Arjuna, then he's just doing these kind of things because they fit within Kshatriya duty. You're supposed to protect someone who comes, and so he doesn't want any payment from that. Maya praised Arjuna's virtue, but he insisted upon doing something for the Pandava. "I simply wish to please you, Partha. You need not see it as repayment." Right, so he's just saying, "I'd just like to do something for you." Arjuna again said that he could not accept anything from Maya. "I do not want to frustrate your desire. If you want to please me," right, you know, so he says he doesn't need anything and he doesn't want to upset Maya, that he'll be frustrated. So he says, "Okay, if you want to do something for me," he said, "then do something for Krishna." Right, means if you please Krishna, that would please me. "That would be more pleasing to me than anything else." Maya turned and looked expectantly at Krishna. After reflecting for a moment, he said, "You are the architect of the celestial demons. If you want to please me, then build a splendid assembly hall for Yudhishthira." So Krishna also doesn't need anything. So Arjuna didn't want anything. He just wanted that Krishna is pleased. And then Krishna thought, well, why doesn't he? He's the architect, so why doesn't he make something very special for Yudhishthira? "The like of this hall should not be found anywhere in the world." Means, you know, means here, but "it should contain the features of celestial architecture and be impossible for anyone else to emulate." So he should do something that has never been seen in the world before, and it should be something that no one else can copy. It's a unique, you know, standalone project. "The Asura skills are well known to Krishna. Maya had constructed many wonderful edifices in the higher planets for the Daityas and Danavas." Maya then assented to Krishna's request and accompanied him and Arjuna back to Indraprastha, where he was introduced to Yudhishthira. The eldest Pandava marveled as Krishna narrated the story of how the Kandava forest was burnt, right, because they were also gone for 2 weeks, you know, 15 days. He received Maya with honor and discussed the hall with him. Right. So then, you know, he's the guest of Krishna and Arjuna, and he's also a great personality in the universe. He's the architect for the demons, celestial demons, not just the local riffraff. And so then they discussed what kind of things to have in the hall. After much thought, Maya drew up a design. He then began to consider where to find the necessary materials for constructing the celestial hall. He told the Pandavas he needed to go to the Himalayas. I have left there a large quantity of diamonds and other precious stones of every description, including those not found on this earth. I shall go to fetch them. Right, because he wants to build, he has to get certain things, and some of these things we can see have to come from all over the place. Maya explained that Rishabharva, king of the Danavas, had formerly engaged him to construct sacrificial altars for the Asuras. He had gathered all kinds of celestial materials, which he had stored at Rishabharva's house high up on the Mainaka mountain. There was also a great club with which Rishabharva had once withstood the gods in battle. Maya would bring that club, equal to 100,000 ordinary clubs, and give it to Bhima. Right, so you have the regular clubs that they'll make, and they'll be very, very powerful, that everybody would use on the battlefield. But one of these was equal to 100,000. It had so much more strength and all that, so it wouldn't break on anything. Anybody would hit a club, it would never break. It could break other clubs and other things, but never. And then who's going to wield that? Because Arjuna is the bow and arrow, for Krishna it's the disc, and that. Plus, he also got a club from Agni. When Arjuna got the chariot, he got a club. So then, now he's building a hall building a hall for Yudhishthira. He gives a club to Bhima. He would also fetch from the depths of the lake on Mainaka the large celestial conch known as Devadatta for Arjuna. If Arjuna blew that conch on the battlefield, it would shatter his opponent's hearts. And we see in the Bhagavad Gita that when it explains that the Kauravas blew their conch shells and beat on the drums and everything, it was very, very tumultuous. You know, so that means a very great sound. But then when Krishna and Arjuna and the others blew on their transcendental conch shells, then it said it shattered their hearts. It just means it completely broke their spirit. Having gained Yudhishthira's permission, the Asura left quickly for the north. Right, because he's supposed to build this for him, so he wants to know it's okay if he goes now. He found all the wealth guarded by Yakshas and Rakshasas, and with their assistance, he brought it back to Indraprastha. Because when the Devatas leave stuff around, then it'll be guarded. So the Rakshasas, Yakshas, Nagas, they'll do this guarding work so that no one could come. One is that because it's celestial, you won't even see it. And even if they could, they wouldn't be able to take it. And then they, you know, very kindly, because he had made all that arrangements before for Rishabharva, who's the, you know, king of the Danavas. And so then they were left there to take care of whatever was left, because he brought so much, he used a certain amount for that, and then so much is left, so then that will be now used. After presenting the club to Bhima and the conch shell to Arjuna, he commenced work. Chapter 15, The Celestial Hall. Soon after Maya began his work on the hall, Krishna approached Yudhishthira and asked his permission to return to Dwarka. He had been away for months and now desired to again see his relatives. Yudhishthira gave his permission reluctantly, knowing he would miss his beloved friend. Krishna then said his farewells, first going to Kunti and touching her feet in respect. Shedding tears, Kunti embraced Krishna and said, "My dear Keshava, you are the supreme soul of this universe. You are always kindly disposed towards everyone, but you especially protect your devotees. From the day Akura arrived in Hastinapur, I knew you were thinking of the welfare of my sons and myself. I am confident that whatever difficulties we experience are all arranged by Providence for our ultimate good." Krishna smiled at Kunti and then left her, promising he would return before long. He then went to see his sister Subhadra and bid her an affectionate farewell. After that, Krishna went to Draupadi, who cried at the thought of his departure. Like her husbands and mother-in-law, Draupadi thought constantly of Krishna. She bowed at his feet and worshipped him, praying that he might soon return. Right, so you see, everybody's devotee. They're all pure devotees, And then, you know, even Krishna's sister Yogamaya is there. You know, so it's special family. After performing the due rites of departure and offering charity to the Brahmins, Krishna mounted his chariot along with Satyaki, who had remained with him in Indraprastha to learn archery from Arjuna. Right, so Satyaki went to the Gurukul with Arjuna that I know of, with Androna, and so now he also I was learning from Arjuna here. Surrounded by the five Pandavas, Krishna looked like Indra, surrounded by the gods. He proceeded slowly along the royal highway towards the city gate. Thousands of citizens lined the streets, shouting and waving as Krishna departed in his chariot, drawn by Shaibya and Sugriva, and bearing the sign of Garuda. So he generally would just go with these two, just two horses, not four. Because just the two, I mean, they can go at the speed of mind, so it doesn't, two's enough. Right. Plus, this is appears that this is also not a war chariot, so then they don't need to use more horses. And then from wherever the main palaces are in the center of the city, then you go out, and so there'll be a royal highway. That'll be the main kind of road, because then, you know, the kings will go there, the army will move on that, so many things. So it's a very big royal highway. So then so many people can come out and see and everything. They can do big programs there. Okay, drawn by Shaibya and Sugriva and bearing the sign of Garuda. So just like Arjuna on his chariot, Krishna on his chariot has Garuda as his flag, and on Arjuna his chariot has Hanuman. Yudhishthira mounted the chariot and personally took the reins. Arjuna stood on the chariot fanning Krishna with a gold-handled chamara whisk. Bhima held a white parasol over Krishna's head, and Nakula and Sahadeva walked ahead on either side of the chariot, clearing the way. Because so many people would come forward, then it'll become dangerous because people will be there. So Nakula and Sahadeva just clear so that, you know, pleasantly they clear because they're moving slowly. One is that it's a royal procession, so it goes slowly and all that. It has some more. But at the same time, as no one really wants Krishna to go, so they're going slowly also. The Pandavas accompanied Krishna out of the city for 4 miles, so quite a ways. Krishna then told them to return home. He bowed to Yudhishthira, who tearfully raised him and said with affection, "My dear Krishna, I do not know what kind of pious activities we must have performed in previous lives, so that you are now so gracious towards us. Even highly renounced yogis and mystics attain a sight of you only with great difficulty. Yet we are householders engaged in politics and worldly affairs. I do not understand why you are so kind to us." So you see, it's because of the devotion. These great mystics, yogis and mystics, what they're doing is very austere, very renounced, you know, very technical, lots of knowledge and all these things. And, you know, they've been doing for so long. But that's the thing. Krishna, he is the ultimate mystic. He's floating all these planets in space. He's created unlimited universes. He's all these different things. He pervades everything through his energies. So for him, the mystic elements is not actually very attractive because he's the source of them. But the devotion of the devotees, that's what's important. So even though the Pandavas are performing the roles of householder kings who then are managing in the politics and all these things, but they're doing everything with devotion and just thinking of Krishna. So for Krishna, that's more important. It's not the austerity, the knowledge, and all these things. It's the absorption in him. And then within that, because you're so absorbed, then yes, you may be detached, as we see as Arjuna. He just does things from duty. Yudhishthira also is just what is the appropriate religious function. After replying with sweet words, Krishna asked Yudhishthira if he could leave for Dwarka. Yudhishthira assented, and with great difficulty, Krishna persuaded the Pandavas not to follow him. Yeah, and he's like, yes, you can go. It doesn't mean they're not going to follow, but he told them that he would always be ready to assist them whenever they needed him. They need only think of him. Krishna then urged his horses onwards, and the five brothers stood together gazing at his chariot as it disappeared into the distance. Then they slowly returned to Indraprastha, their minds absorbed in thoughts of their friend from Dwarka. Because the etiquette is this, you know, great personalities like that, when they leave, then you just until you can't see anymore. So then Krishna will have, it'll be explained. You'll see the chariot, all the aspects. Then part of the chariot's gone. Then that. Then just the flag, and then everything disappears. So only after the flag they can't see. Then they went back. A few days after Krishna left, Maya, having completed all his designs and plans, began his actual construction. So he went to get all the stuff, because then he could see exactly what he has. And then having all that, now he can start the construction. On an auspicious day marked by favorable stars, the Asura measured out a piece of land 5,000 cubits square. So 5,000 cubits means 7,500 feet. Because a cubit is 18 inches, 1.5 feet. So if you have 5,000, so then 5,000, half of that is 2.5, so 7,500 feet. So, yeah, like 1.5, 1.5 miles, basically. I mean, excuse me. Yeah, very big. It's a very big building. So this is a single building. Before commencing work, he distributed charity to thousands of Brahmins. He arranged for them to be fed with the finest of foods and gave them wealth, invoking their blessings before he began. So even though they're demons, like we were saying before, the demons are following the Varnashram because they know that's just what works. So even here he's doing something. He wants it to be auspicious and maybe to work out. So he's doing all this nice charity and getting the blessings of the Brahmins. Maya then erected thousands of golden pillars, upon which he constructed a fabulous assembly hall. After 14 months, his work was completed. So it was very big, very elaborate. It took so long. The hall appeared like a mass of new clouds rising in the sky, and its celestial effulgence seemed to darken the sun's rays. It was spacious, cool, delightful, and highly opulent. So just how they built it and everything, the high roofs and the openings and this, then the air can move through, you'd have the cooling, all these things would be there, very nice. With its golden walls and archways inlaid with celestial gems, and its crystal stairways worked with coral, the hall surpassed even the Yadu Sudharma Hall. In its center, was a beautiful artificial pond filled with lotuses and lilies whose stalks were made of brilliant gems, along with other flowers and leaves made of gold and silver. On its clear waters there were also real lotuses in full blossom. So it was an artificial pond. It means it wasn't, it was dug down, it was a certain, not so deep and all that. But in that he had all these, lotuses and that made of brilliant gems and that, and other flowers and leaves that were gold and silver. So had gold ones, silver ones, and gem ones. They were there. Plus he had in the water real ones growing. Swans, Karandavas, and Chakravakas swarmed around on its surface, and golden-colored turtles played on its bottom. The sides of the pond were set with costly marble slabs studded with pearls, and all around it were celestial flowers moving in gentle breeze. Okay. Yeah, so you're going to have it going down, so that means you're going to have these steps going down on all sides, so these really special, marbles there, and they're inlaid with pearls and all that. So then the whiteness of the marble, then the pearls also has the whiteness, but by putting the marbles, pearls in there, one, it'll decorate it and give it a nice look, but it'll have that kind of, those little bumps so that it won't be slippery, so you can go down, you can walk back, and it all has the pearls in it and everything. So very nicely done. The hall was adorned with gardens full of ever-blossoming trees, and the air was filled with delicious fragrance. So you have also inside is that the all nice gardens in that inside. So it's going to be a courtyard. The thing will be the construction will be around. In the side will be the lakes and then maybe gardens and all these other things. So how they put it and whether there's many courtyards and all that. Maya arranged for 8,000 powerful rakshasas known as kinkaras to guard the hall, right? So that they're just there to guard. And so it's not just up to the Pandavas, because this is most, opulent. It's more opulent than the Sudharma, which is in Dwarka. So he make, you know, Krishna wanted to make it really special. So we can see is that the power of Vishwakarma and Maya is coming from Krishna. And so here Krishna then also gave him that ability to make something so special and so wonderful. So then they have these 8,000 Rakshasas to protect. That means no other kings, no daityas, no danavas, the demigods. No one can come and try to take the hall. Keeping themselves invisible, the well-armed Rakshasas, who had massive bodies and fearful faces, arrow-shaped ears, right, you know, so he's pointed like that, and blood-red eyes, stationed themselves all around the hall, ever alert to danger. Right, so it wasn't like, you know, there's 8,000 of them, they just sit back and play cards all day. No, they're always alert and always ready, but they would keep themselves invisible, so they won't scare anybody. The Asura then reported to Yudhishthira that the hall was ready for occupation. Yudhishthira consulted with the Brahmins and selected an auspicious day to enter the hall. Right, so Maya's business was building it. So he did the, you know, whatever it is, the auspicious preliminaries, feeding the Brahmins, doing it. Then he constructed when it's done. Now moving into it, since it's Yudhishthira's, now Yudhishthira's Brahmins, they'll do the ceremony for moving into the hall. He fed and gave charity to thousands of Brahmins and, along with his brothers, worshipped Vishnu and the gods. A ceremony was arranged, and actors, bards, singers, and wrestlers exhibited their skill for the Pandavas' pleasure. Right, because at this program, so many people will come and all that, so they make some nice program. A feast was then distributed to all of Indraprastha's citizens, right, to the whole city they fed everybody. Precisely at noon, the Pandavas, followed by crowds of rishis, entered their hall through the enormous golden doors at its eastern entrance. Right, so, because at noon, that's the Abhijit Muhurta, and so that's auspicious for doing anything, and it always gives victory and all that. So for the Kshatriyas, that would be a very nice time that they start. And then the Kshatriyas come in the eastern, like that here. They took their places on the jewel-encrusted thrones at the head of the main hall. Around them sat the rishis and many kings who had been invited from other countries. In that assembly hall were seen numerous famous rishis such as Asita, Devala, Vyasadeva, Maitreya, Parvata, Markandeya, Jaimini, Bhrigu, and hundreds of others. See, all the great personalities came because it is something very special. All the virtuous sages had their mind and senses under full control, and they looked like so many moons shining amid the assembly. The Pandavas listened respectfully as the rishis recited Vedic histories to invoke auspiciousness. The kings in attendance then stepped forward one by one to make offerings to Yudhishthira and to worship him along with all honor. Chitrasena, the Gandharva leader, arrived with the Apsaras, along with the Charanas, who had descended from the heavens. They entertained the assembly with celestial music and dance. So you can see is how also one is just the Pandavas have, you know, impressed everybody by their behavior and how they're doing everything, and then it's by Krishna's arrangement, and then Maya, you know, has made the hall. So all these different personalities are coming. So the character of them, that these people would come, and the character of them that they could appreciate this and would deal and not become proud. Worshipped and entertained by such beings, Yudhishthira resembled Brahma, seated in his own hall on the highest planet in the universe. Suddenly, the Pandavas saw Narad Muni, Narada Rishi, appear by his mystical power. We've done the second one already?
This is the third one rolling.
Third?
This is the third rolling right now.
Okay. So then we should probably stop here. Okay. So now, how you say? Yeah. Now Narad Rishi's appeared. Now he'll come and he'll give instructions and everything. So now we'll next time we'll hear about Narad Muni's instructions to you. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai.